Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Bob Barber, your host here at SAT Radio, SACM Tech Tech Tribe, or Second Amendment Tech Tech Tribe. We have a special tonight. It's called Broken Treaties. It's a pre-recorded law class for tribal courts by Judge Naidu, the instructor. This is a great, great class, folks. And we can have a little Q&A after the class, if that's what you'd like. Take a couple of seconds right now. Get your coffee, your pen and paper, and take some notes, because you're giving up a lot of notes here. And you're going to be surprised by, after the class, with some of the statements made by the judge. Truly amazing. So let's get on with this class called Broken Treaties.
Yeah, this is called Broken Treaties, Broken Promises, Broken Laws. And I believe everyone has a copy of this topic?
Yes, I posted the document yesterday on the Skype group, and it's also on triballaw.tk in the file section.
Okay, good. Now, I'm starting off with a Latin common law dictum. No crime is greater than disobedience. Nullum crimen maius est obi inobedientia. So we're going to show how the corporation, otherwise known as a government, otherwise in reality the squatter government, breaks the law and violates the law out of abject disobedience. Now, before we go into the DNA of these treaties and the broken promises and the laws, it's good to understand some basic foundational terms. Okay? Every treaty signed by the United States government, whether the Marshall Plan, whether the League of Nations, World War I, the Treaty of Versailles, the Gadsden Purchase, the Treaty of Hidalgo, Guadalupe, any treaty with foreign nations and with indigenous tribes in America is what's known as a Carthaginian peace. This is named after Rome defeated Carthage 210 years before Christ. And this is what John Maynard Keynes, a British economist, said of a peace treaty. It's a brutal treaty of peace where the adversary is utterly, completely crushed, destroyed, and subjugated. So it's a Carthaginian peace. All we've had is nothing but a Carthaginian peace. Why? Because treaties are made to be broken. Right? And then when somebody questions the United States, why did you break this treaty? Before they bring out their big guns, they will say, this is in deference to world peace. Mm-hmm. Now, if you read Dwight Eisenhower's farewell address in 1961, he asked for absolution for having created this monster called the military-industrial complex. If you knew and if you understood what the Eisenhower government did in promoting world peace, in 1953, they got rid of Mohammad Mossadegh's democratically elected government in Iran. Now, in 1951, Time magazine called Mohammad Mossadegh of Iran the man of the year. He was the first Arab or non-white man to have got a Doctor of Laws degree from a university in Europe. Now, to get rid of Mohammad Mossadegh, the CIA financed what's known as the Warriors of Islam. What are the Warriors of Islam? Today they are called Al-Shabaab, they're called Al-Qaeda, they're called ISIS. We financed the Warriors of Islam, a terrorist organization, to get rid of Mohammad Mossadegh, whom the people installed and elected. How? By the CIA proving to the people that he is a communist. So about 10,000 people were paid, including the Ayatollah Khomeini, who came back in 1979 and overthrew the overthrower. He overthrew whom the U.S. had financed, that is, the Shah. Why? With the Shah in place, they can turn on the spigots for oil. So Iran, 1953. In 1954, there was a man called Jacobo Arbenz Guzman who was elected Guatemala's president. The CIA overthrew him. Why? Because he wanted to nationalize American-owned plantations and industries, because that's Guatemala. That was 1954. In 1956, after the 17th parallel was created to keep Ho Chi Minh in the north, they created South Vietnam and America installed Ngo Dinh Diem. In 1953, we aided Spain, Franco Spain, by allowing the UN to United Nations to admit Spain in 1955. 1959, Batista is destroyed in Cuba by Castro, and the Eisenhower government went all out to eliminate him by assassination. In 1960, the Belgian Congo had a man called Patrice Lumumba. He was rejected by the United States because he wanted to make the Congo straight. The United States backed Joseph Mobutu, who was a billion-dollar thief. So the list goes on what the military-industrial complex did in the interest of world peace. And then in 1950, there was a monkey called Joseph McCarthy, who started the Red Scare. Everybody was scared, excrementless of Stalin. But nobody remembers it was Stalin alone, with 30 over million dead, who defeated Nazi Germany. Not Patton, not Marshall, not Eisenhower, not our green berets or white berets. It was Stalin. We forget that. But coming back to world peace, broken treaties, and broken promises. That's just an introduction to tell you what's going on in the real world. The roots to our treaty making, which is directly proportional to war making, is found in Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2 of the now defunct U.S. Constitution, which says that the POTUS, President of the United States, has treaty-making powers subject to Senate ratification. If the Senate says no, the POTUS uses executive orders. Again, they are totally unconstitutional to override LOTUS. LOTUS is the legislature of the United States. COTUS is the Constitution of the United States. POTUS, President of the United States, and SCOTUS is the Supreme Court of the United States. All right? So now, Article 6, Section 2 says, of POTUS, treaties are the supreme law of the land. Nice to hear, good to quote and cite, wonderful to sound, but in reality, it's impotent. Now, after looking at Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2, Article 6, Section 2, we're going to look at Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3 of COTUS, which says that the Congress shall have power to declare war. Now, why they didn't use the word wage, I have no idea. Declare, in my opinion, is a paper threat. Wage is a physical advance, a show of arms, boots on the ground. But they chose to use the word shall have power to declare war. As Humpty Dumpty says, what are words? They are what you think they should be whenever you want them to be. Then Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1 says, the president shall be commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and of the militias of the several states. Now, the Second Amendment doesn't say that because the Bill of Rights has got nothing to do with the seven articles written by the Congress of the federal government. Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1 says, the president shall be commander-in-chief of the army. So the president, since the first president was an army man, automatically is viewed as a commander-in-chief. Now, the Shiite in the White House, the only time he's used a gun is to hammer a nail. Because I don't think that Manchurian candidate knows how to use a gun. Mm. Right? I think this guy is wired in such a way that he's allergic to gun metal and gun oil. And that's why he comes up with all these executive orders, unconstitutional, ban on gun control, and he's got this concealed weapons thing, which is not at all mentioned in the Constitution. So Texas took the lead and said, to hell with your law. Yeah? So now, if you look at Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11, and Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2, Section 1, where Congress has the power to declare war and the president is a CNC, the president automatically thinks he can declare war. Because this is what happened with Bush 43 when they walked into Iraq. So it is an implied interpretation, a twist and a spin to his war powers. The only only entity that can stop the POTUS, the people. But then the POTUS knows the people can and will do nothing. So what does the POTUS do? He uses executive orders to veto Congress and to have it his way as commander-in-chief. Now, why does the commander-in-chief do what he does? There is always a reason for an explanation, for a cause and effect. See, World War I and World War II were financed by big industrialists, by the big banks, by the robber barons, the Rothschilds and Rothschilds, Rothschilds, whatever you want to pronounce it. These are the people who finance wars. If A is fighting B, they will finance both sides. Why? Because their land has already been underwritten as collateral. So the lender doesn't give a rat's belch in hell who wins or who loses. Get it? It doesn't matter.
He gets both.
Yeah, he gets paid by both. They're called war reparations. Now, let's take World War One. After Germany was completely crushed, they had a couple of billion dollars to pay back the lenders. How did the lenders create the reparation? They made sure that the debt was purchased 30 cents on the dollar by a reputable bank. So now I go and buy something of value at 30 cents on the dollar. I'm bank one, right? Now, bank A. Bank B realizes, hey, wait a minute. Why did bank A buy that? So now bank B wants to buy what bank A has. Now, bank A paid 35 cents on the dollar. Bear with me. I will show you the scam. That becomes genuine. Now then, Bank A reluctantly, inverted commas, quotation marks, well, you've twisted my arm. Okay, I'll sell you my debt that I purchased for 47 cents on the dollar. Now, meanwhile, Bank C, economic hitmen, are wondering, why did Bank B buy from Bank A? That's got to be something here. So now Bank C will twist the arm of Bank B, and Bank B will go, well, okay. I tell you what, you can buy the debt at 67 cents on the dollar. In the meantime, Bank D is watching and says, why did Bank A sell to Bank B, and why did Bank C buy from Bank A? I want to be in it. I want to be in it. So now, just a moment. Okay, my darling. I love you too. Bye. Family off for lunch or breakfast. Okay, coming back. Sorry about that. Now, so Bank E, Bank F, Bank G, then the last fellow to buy the bank debt will pay 98 cents on the dollar. So now the original debt is paid off, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is how they financed Nazi Germany in World War II. You see, but the pain in the neck was Russia. You see, Russia hated fascism and Nazism, okay? The Americans hated, I mean, starting from the Woodrow Wilson administration, they hated Lenin. Why? Because Lenin was all about equal pay, gave the land back to the peasants, and installed the Bolshevik revolution and brought about an egotocracy, which capitalism does not like. That was the beginning of the hatred between America and Russia. Now, when World War II happened, Churchill and Roosevelt didn't figure in Stalin. You know, according to a great book called The Concise Untold History of the United States, one of the great books other than that written by Howard Zinn, this Concise Untold History of the United States by Oliver Stone and Peter Kuznick chronicles how Russia, Soviet Russia, stopped Nazi Germany. I mean, look, Leningrad was already under siege. But they never took Leningrad. They were forced to eat rats and human corpses. But the resolve of the Russian people, that's who defeated Nazism. Not our heroes. and our zeros, get your facts right. We lost about 580,000 soldiers. The Russians lost 23 million. All we did was send Patton to the south of Italy and the Normandy invasion, which is very badly planned. But what has all this got to do with broken treaties and broken promises? I'm trying to show you how big business controls the White House and the Congress. Why the Middle East? Oil, oil, oil. We have an oil-garchy, not an oligarchy, an oil-garchy. Hey, in the beginning, we controlled 50% of the oil supplies from America. And we decided, well, let's save the environment after Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt came into power. He was a nature lover, and he created all these wonderful parks, stole Indian land, carved some ugly heads on Mount Pahasapa, Black Hills, Mount Rushmore, big deal. But all this is Wall Street controlled. Okay? So your homework for this week is why violate and break these treaties. So let's now put the idea mnemonics to work and look at the issue. Look at why they do what they do. The first issue is, are treaties signed between the federal government and the indigenous tribes of North America binding based on applicable law? And what is the governing law on treaties so far? What is the governing law so far?
Supreme law of the land, supposedly.
Article 6, Section 2.
Right.
Now, that is local, right? That's local. Now, let's look at international law. The governing law is the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties. It was adopted in May 22, 1969, and opened for signature the next day. It started in 1949. It took 20 years to draft into international law by the International Law Commission. As of April 2014, we have 114 nation states participating. The Republic of China is recognizing it. After Taiwan was replaced by the People's Republic of China. 66 United Nations member states have neither signed nor ratified the convention. Guess who is one of the 66?
United States.
Why? Why didn't they sign it? Why didn't they ratify it?
Because they did not want to attach themselves to the Geneva Convention.
Because of their broken treaties with the Indians.
Exactly.
That is correct. Because it is their stock in trade. They believe in violating, breaking, breaching, disobeying law. That's what the government is all about. When you challenge the government, they say you're a terrorist. You see, it's very simple. What they say is the law. When they break the law, it's called policy. When you challenge the law before you want to break it, you call a terrorist, enemy of the state, enemy combatant. Get it?
Mm-hmm.
That's what a lawmaker is all about. He's also the lawbreaker. So, The VCLT, Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties, it's nice when you're eating peacock tongues and sturgeon brains and eggs at 10 o'clock in the morning for this United Nations high tea party. Yes, when you rub shoulders with diplomats and Teflon-coated ambassadors and what have you. You know, $10,000 per head. That's the food and beverage thing. Drinking expensive wines, eating exotic foods. Yeah. Rocky Mountain oysters too, I'm told. So, you got to understand that this treaty or treaties is an international thing, which they quote with great alarm and great verve and vim and vitality and vigor, while all the time breaking it. India was one of the few countries that recognized the customary status of the convention. And it's important to understand why the customary status of the convention is important, because they recognize customary law. Constitutio loci observanda est. The custom of the place is to be observed. The custom of the Indian country is to be observed. Now, that's a very inconvenient thing for the lawbreaker. Theft is theft, no matter who steals. Okay. Now, let's look at the VCLT, Article 6, Section 2, Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2, of the Constitution and Uncle Sam. After it ratified the U.S. Constitution with the original 13 colonies, they decided to enter into treaties with indigenous tribes. Now, don't forget that 13 colonies already had treaties with these indigenous tribes before 1789 and 1787. So what did they do? The reason they went into that treaty with indigenous tribes was either, see, out of 568 tribes, about 220 were nomadic. Nomads. They traveled within a 1,000-mile radius. They allowed the land to become not to become fallow, but to rejuvenate itself. So the white man comes in there and says, oh, there's nobody here, I'll just grab it. But then by the time the Indians came back, there were already forts and settlements and homes and ranches and farms and gardens and homesteads. So either they grabbed it or they paid $0.02 to $1.50 per acre based on the European concept of private ownership. The Indians believed in communal property ownership. Why? Because unknown to them, they were obeying the teachings of the Bible. Leviticus 25:23. Now, Public Law 97-280 says, the Bible is the word of God, but who cares? We are the makers. We can break the law. Jefferson, Monroe, Madison, Lincoln, they saw to it that settlers were encouraged to go west of the Appalachians, farther west of the Mississippi, to settle and populate the ancestral indigenous lands. The biggest land grab was the Ohio Valley. And how did they do this? Desecrating, dispossessing, destroying, and relocating indigenous tribes to reserves or reservations, usually arid country, where cultivation, hunting, farming, gathering, fishing was impossible. Why? Cut off the food supply, they will starve to death. We don't need them. Why don't we need indigenous people? Because the more I look at an Indian, the more I look at a redskin, the more I'm reminded of the fact that I stole his land. It's best they all die. because I cannot acclimate them. I cannot acculturate them because they believe in their own religious system. Why do you think the Lakota Sioux till today have rejected the $1.5 billion payment in exchange for Pahasapa, the Black Hills? They rather live in squalor, in abject poverty, than take a penny from Uncle Sam. So the plan was to starve them out of existence because indigenous tribes rejected Western ways. If I cannot make them depend on government handouts, I will teach them how to kill themselves. Introduce poverty, introduce drugs, introduce child prostitution, introduce HIV, they will automatically, and alcohol, of course, they will automatically self-destruct. Part B of your homework, the U.S. Constitution, the United States, discontinued treaty making with indigenous tribes in 1871. Why? Oh, by the way, I've sent all of you a format as to how to answer your homework. I don't want two paragraphs or three paragraphs. I want minimum 250 words based on IDEA. Identify, define, describe, evaluate, examine, apply the action. Please follow the format. Please. All right, so now these treaties are effective if you can take it to a court of equity. They are defective when you take it to a court of law. Why? Because when you take it to a federal law, what does the court do to say you are wrong? I want to open this out. Tom, don't answer. Ray, keep quiet. I open this out. Why do you think you get defeated in a federal court or a state court when you take a treaty as your basis of your claim? Anybody?
Because they say you're not graduate.
I think they'll tell you that they don't have jurisdiction over the case.
Very close. Very nice.
You're not party
yes.
to it?
That's the same thing, which means they don't have jurisdiction, which is very good. But what am I looking for? What is the justification for the court not to look at the treaty? We've been through this. I've explained this in the past.
They'll teach you the law instead of explaining the law.
No. What doctrine does the court use not to look at the treaty? What is their justification to walk away? Jurisdiction is good. Okay? So why did they take your $400 when you went to file it? Aha! Aha! They want your money. But what is the justification that the judges use to not look at the Constitution? Come on, you know this.
I forget what you called it, but it's the doctrine where they say they don't have to look at the Constitution.
What is the doctrine called?
Oh, I can't remember. Oh, I know it's
okay.
Something weird.
Tom.
Constitutional avoidance.
Thank you. They use the constitutional avoidance doctrine. Now, mind you, it's all bovine excrement. Why? In 1803, they used the power of judicial review in Marbury versus Madison to declare an act of the Congress which was repugnant to the Constitution as void. Now, Marbury versus Madison has not been overruled. So what's this cute, sexy constitutional avoidance thing? It's something they invented. So that's the reason I keep telling you, don't waste your time in their courts. Come to an ecclesiastical or a tribal court, because Public Law 97-280 recognizes the Bible as the Word of God. It didn't say recognize the church. It said recognize the Bible. And tribal court judgments have full faith and credit entitlements. 28 United States Code 1738. It's not been repealed. We don't want it to be repealed. The only challenge is we need to find a collections attorney who's got the chutzpah and the testicular fortitude to go after this. Maybe we need a woman attorney. I don't know. So that's why, yes.
Question. So when it went from public law to public policy, was that where the judicial review came into effect, when it changed from public law to public policy?
All right. That's a very good question. Law becomes policy when the legislature and the executives spin it out of control. The job of the judiciary is to interpret the law and declare the law. Now, when I say interpret and declare the law, the template is the Constitution. Now, judicial review is not mentioned in the Constitution, but it was mentioned in the Federalist Papers, the Federalist number 78 by Alexander Hamilton. So, the Constitution of the United States was framed under the template of the Federalist Papers. So when law becomes a policy, it is either good for the government, but no good for the law. You see, and the next thing that the judiciary does is, when the question becomes very political, they will say, it's a political question doctrine, we cannot touch it. This is before they grant certiorari. Certiorari is when the Supreme Court decides to hear a case that came from the lower courts. It can come from the state court under Rule 13 of the rules of the Supreme Court. So, coming back to when law becomes policy, it goes out of control. When policy becomes law, it cannot be enforced, because Congress and the executive can change the decision of the Supreme Court by passing either legislation or the president issuing an executive order. Have I answered your question, sir?
Yes, you have.
Okay. Now, after we have identified what the issue is, let's define, all right, IDEA. What is a treaty? According to most dictionaries, a treaty is a compact, a contract, a covenant, an agreement. Excuse me. That is binding. And that was voluntarily, freely, willingly, wantonly, significantly signed between two sovereigns. Now, the question is, who is a sovereign? I've checked about 7 dictionaries. Bottom line, sovereign means an entity with unlimited power and authority. So when the U.S. government signed treaties with 275 Indian tribes, they did so by recognizing the Indian tribes as sovereign. But what was the constitutional template for that? Anyone? What was the constitutional template to sign these treaties, treating the indigenous tribes as a sovereign? Anyone? Speak up. Not a trick question. What's the constitutional template, framework, or underpinning to consider an Indian nation a sovereign? Anyone?
Well, it wouldn't be Article 6, would it?
No, no. That's a treaty. But what specifically mentions the Indian tribe? Tom, stay quiet. Others, come on. There's only three times the Indians are mentioned in the Constitution, right? Article 1, Section 2, 14th Amendment, Section 2, what else? Come on! Not been doing your homework. The Indian Commerce Clause. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3. The Congress shall have power to regulate commerce with foreign nations, comma, among the several states, comma, and with Indian tribes. That is the constitutional rationale, underpinning, template, reason, justification, purpose, function, duty, obligation for the United States to have entered into a treaty with a co-sovereign. So now we have identified the issue. Why did they break the treaty? Define the issue. What is a treaty? Two definitions. What is a treaty and who is a sovereign? All right? So now we know what they did. They signed a treaty so they can grab or buy land on the cheap. The second reason they signed the treaty was to break the treaty. Why did they break the treaty? They got a bigger gun. They got a better military. Now, we evaluate. Why did the U.S. decide to honor these treaties with indigenous tribes by disobeying and breaching them? You got the answer for that already, right?
Get the land and the resources.
On the cheap.
Yeah.
Or we just take it. What are they going to do? They make noise, we kill them. We defeat them. And then the conqueror can do what he likes with them under the Geneva Convention. Very convenient. Very convenient. When you get a bigger gun. When you got boots on the ground. Arma in armato, sinunt hura sumeri. The law permits the taking of arms against the armed. But who listens to it? Nobody believes it. I mean, look at the Hammonds. Look at the Bundys. They were in clover. They had a perfect opportunity. Some people supported them. Then apparently the Hammonds gave themselves up because the grandfather didn't want to go into prison, then why escalate it in the first place? Then why rock the cradle? And when the baby cries, hey, it ain't mine. Can't understand this, my friends. Can't understand this. So why sign these treaties in the first place? Who lost? Who benefited from an American perspective? Is there hope? What is a just penalty for those who disobeyed the supreme law of the land? So this is how you evaluate what punishment, what sanctions must come down. Because when you break the law, you got to be punished. Bible says that Cain wasn't tried for his brother's murder, and neither was Moses. Think about that. And now we come to the favorite part of the idea mnemonics. How do we apply the action? We know they broke the treaties. We know how they broke the treaties. We know when and where they broke the treaties. We know why they broke the treaties. Now, how do we bring about reclamation, reparation, restitution? How? A, police power. 2, full restoration of all property and indigenous rights under international law, tribal law, ecclesiastical law, federal Indian law. But then, they are lawyers, they are lawmakers and lawbreakers. Then how do you collect compensation for these indigenous tribes? You can set up a war crimes tribunal in the International Court of Justice in The Hague, or the International Court of Human Rights and Justice in Strasbourg, France.
But they're run by bankers.
You know? And tribal governments and tribal courts should be issuing tribal court judgments for millions of dollars and wait to collect it or factor it and sell it 30, 40 cents on the dollar. And, you know, that's one other way to collect these judgments as soon as our bank is up and running. Now, let's look at some, in page 7, I've got some premises, some basic viewpoints. All right? Starting in 1825, President John Quincy Adams, of a sixth president, said, "The United States goes not abroad in search of monsters to destroy." Does it mean it stays within the United States border to search for monsters to destroy? I think so. Look at the way they took Texas, stole Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California, and Oregon territories, all in Indian country. Interestingly, fast forward to October 13, General Martin Dempsey testifying before the Armed Services Committee, the House of Representatives, he says, "I did not become chairman of the Joint Chiefs to oversee the decline of the armed forces. And an end state that would have this nation and its military not to be a global power. That's not who we are as a nation." You see? Then The Untold History of the United States by Oliver Stone and historian Peter Kuznick. Interesting read. I got the book with me. Overseas Empire was the logical outcome of the course of the United States that it chose at its founding. The Lakota scholar Elizabeth Cook Lynn said this: "The current mission of the United States to become the center of political enlightenment to be taught to the rest of the world began with the Indian Wars and has become the dangerous provocation of this nation's historical past." All right? Has become the dangerous provocation. The historical connection between Little Big Horn, 1876, and the political dialogue, and the uprising in Baghdad, must become part of the political dialogue of America if the fiction of decolonization is to happen and hope for deconstruction of the colonial story is to come about. This is in the book, Indian Wars, New Indians, Old Wars.
Okay.
Stand by.
I've had to mute a number of people who are making background noise.
Yeah, I'm muting myself for a little bit.
Right, right. Joyce, I see you have no background noise now. So can you mute yourself again?
Yeah, because I'm muted.
No, I've muted Joyce at some point.
Okay.
Well, you, Joyce, you're actually rather close to the mic and rattling something.
Well, I'm using my headset and my computer and my laptop. Okay.
Okay.
Here's something that the Okama poet Simon Ortiz said in From the Sand Creek, Rising in This Heart, which is our America, page 86. The future will not be made with loss and waste, though the memory will be there. Eyes will become kind and deep. The bones of this nation will mend after the revolution. Emphasis mine. And then there was this great man, Professor Larry Sabato. You got to get this book from the University of Virginia, Tom, A More Perfect Union.
Okay.
In this book, he advocates a constitutional amendment to the COTUS to specify with and in precise terms the exact powers of the legislature, the executive, and the judiciary. The extent of executive orders and powers, the right to privacy, the right of government to eavesdropping, wiretapping, rights of the people to eavesdrop and wiretap the government. If it's a constitutional limited one, why can't the people keep tags on the cabal? Abortion rights, affirmative action, voting rights, rights and limits of law enforcement, rights to same-sex marriage, rights to remain silent, extent of free speech, war-making powers, people's court of equity, etc. Finally, my translation. Uncle Sam, militarist Uncle Sam, will occupy every inch of territory locally and overseas. That's what it's all about. They succeeded using the rule of law. This is our imperial gaze. Like the British Empire, where the sun never set, our empire will have two suns and several planets. This is our manifest destiny, God ordained. A God that shuts both eyes at desecration, destruction, genocide, and the extermination of indigenous tribes across North, Central, and South America and elsewhere. This is who we are. This is us, the people. All right? So we can do what we like, whenever we like. We got a bigger gun. And we have no conscience. What the hell? We'll use our boots on the ground, conquer, destroy, subdue, expand. Case in point, Hawaii, Puerto Rico, Vickers Island, Okinawa, the Inuit of Thule, Greenland, Guam, Samoa, Diego Garcia, Bikini Atoll. Just to name a few. And this is what Henry Kissinger, I don't know if he's still alive. This is what he said when the Bikini Atoll nuclear bomb was tested. Well, there's only 90,000 people out there. Who gives a damn? If you read Vine Deloria's Island of Shame at page 15, you will see. And this retard was one time our NSA advisor and Secretary of State. More control will come when any murmur from any jihadist, communist, terrorist, dissenter, conscientious objector, or patriot. That's enough for us to go Iraq style, change your dynamics. Who can stop us except for the masses chopping the heads of the elites, Bastille style? But to give you some idea of our military bases overseas, 287 in Germany, 130 in Japan, 106 in South Korea, 89 in Italy, 57 in England, 21 in Portugal, and look at the whole list. 2 trillion per year minimum. This is huge business, folks. This is huge business. How long must the people wait for direct action to take back this beautiful country? I don't know. We still have a lot of work to do. We still have much, much, much to do. It doesn't mean we're not doing anything. It's just a question of getting our people together. But by God, we will be there. Amen. Questions, please. Concerns.
Yeah. A lot to take in, right? So.
You have a question?
Almost. Where? What happened?
I open the floor for questions. Anybody?
Okay, I have a question. Why is there so much noise on those recordings? Unbelievable. Okay. Does anybody have a question or a comment about these broken treaties? Very interesting law class that I participated in. I'm still a tribal law student. But let's hear from you all. What do you have to say about broken treaties? Do you think it's worth being broadcasted? Do you think it's a waste of time? Or should people know about this information that we received in these law classes? Fantastic. I'm not going to receive this education in any other university. Well, are we a university? No, he just happened to have these law classes that I participated in, along with a couple of others that are in the room here right now. Let's hear from you. Just press 1. You want to say anything? In fact, let me just open it up to everybody. I'll just leave you all on the air, noise or no noise.
May I ask a question? Can you hear me?
Help yourself. Go ahead. Who are you and where are you?
This is Jabbar. I called in a while back. I haven't called in since. I've been busy. But I do have a question for the judge. I believe I heard...
The judge is not here, but ask the question because the judge is going to hear your question when he listens to this particular rebroadcast. So go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, okay, here's the question. I've heard it said that the Supreme Court interprets law.
We have a funny one on here right now. So let's find out who's making the noise. What's your last 4 of your phone numbers, Jabbar?
6906.
6906. All right. So let's cut out the funny
ones. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So yeah, 6906.
Okay. Let me just cut everybody out. That way we won't hear the funny one. Okay. It's just not really a funny one. Just maybe he is really snoring. I just got rid of it. So go ahead.
Okay.
Ask your question.
Let me start over. I heard it said that the judges interpret the law. But
that's
if Congress writes the law and they use certain language and words when they write the law, why does the judge need to interpret it? If when they write it, it should be stated the way it should be read and interpreted, if you follow what I'm saying.
Okay, one explanation the judge does give is when you go to a court, and let's say you're a defendant or a prosecutor, either way, you go to court and the judge, should the judge know what the law is? What is your opinion? Should the judge know what the law is?
I believe
yes
that
or no.
The judge
yes or no.
Should
the judge
yes.
know it? Okay, now,
yes.
In case the judge does not know what the law is, then do you think the reason why lawyers or attorneys are in the court, they would know the law in case the judge didn't know the law?
Is that a question?
Yes, yes. What do you feel about that?
Well,
what if the judge didn't know the law? Do you believe that the lawyers and attorneys are in court because they know the law and the judge doesn't?
No. I believe that I believe they have their version of what the law says.
So where's the law? Where is the law? The law is black ink. The law is black ink on white.
Correct.
In books.
Correct.
Okay. Now, knowing that, why do you think the lawyers and attorneys are in the court? In other words, if the judge knew the law, why are there lawyers and attorneys in the court? And all you did was present either the defense or the prosecution. Let's say you're litigating your case in a court and the judge knew the law. He'll make a decision quickly, right? He knows the law.
Yes.
You don't need attorneys and lawyers, right?
That would make sense, yes.
You're there pro se without legal representation because the judge knows the law. He knows which book to go to read the law. But let's say you had a jury trial, and you should never go to court unless you have a jury trial. Should always be a jury there. Never go to court unless it's a jury. I don't care if it's traffic ticket, whatever, murder, whatever. Have a jury. Period. Now, why should you have a jury than not have a jury?
Why should I have a jury versus not having a jury? Is that what your question was?
Yeah.
To give me a chance to present the written law as it is written based on the definition of the words that are written in the law book.
Well, first of all, the judge is going to instruct the jury what the law is. So you
Correct.
Don't have to do that. You want, listen, was the reason why you're in the court, because you got a problem with something with the contract, you're accused of murder. But let me ask you something. Was the jury, was every person in the jury at the infraction at the time?
No.
Was every, they weren't, right? Was the judge there?
No.
If you had attorneys, were the attorneys there?
No.
So let me ask you, would you rather trust the opinion from 12 jurors versus the one from the judge?
Yes.
That's why you have a jury. Never go to a court unless you have a jury. I don't care what the judge said. I don't care what the attorney said. Always have 12 heads against one. That makes sense to you?
Yeah, that makes sense. But if the judge is going to instruct the jury on what the law is, and if the judge is, for whatever reason, corrupt and misconstrues what the law is for, you know, obvious reasons, and he won't let you, in defending yourself, even make reference to what the law is, then, you know, what can one do if the jury's there other than to plead the facts of the case, which is did something happen or something didn't happen, and were you involved in what happened?
Now, that's where
which
the
is usually what.
That's where the attorneys come in. Since none of the jury members were at the scene of the crime, and the judge wasn't there, and the attorneys weren't there, whoever paints the best picture. You ever heard that saying, a picture is worth a thousand words?
Yes, I've heard that.
Okay. Now, what if a drawing was made by the defense? Say you're a defendant. You're the defendant. If your lawyer can draw the best pictures which convey the best meaning of you not being guilty, who's going to win the case?
Well, in a criminal case, I would win the case. But suppose it's just a infraction where there's no injured party.
But the point I'm making to you is whoever creates the best images in the mind of the jury, they're going to lose?
No.
Are they going to win?
They're going to win. They should win.
That's right. That's why you have a jury. That's why you have an attorney or lawyer. There's only a lawyer in a court of equity. There's an attorney in a court of law. Court of law are your courts that are on the street, you know, district courts, courts, appellate courts, municipal courts, the ones that always want money. The court can care less about you or the trial. They want the money. That's how they
Correct.
Stay in business. Okay. So, if you're in a tribal court where fairness and justice is the actual outcome, then a jury makes sense.
Jury I agree makes with
sense. You. Right, because whoever can paint the best picture in the minds of the jury wins the case. Whether you are guilty or not doesn't make a difference. If that jury goes in and they're deliberating whether you are guilty or not of as many counts that are stated, don't you think whoever built the best picture wins? Especially when all jurors have to vote unanimously in one direction or another. Hope you have a good lawyer, man. Let's hope you have a good lawyer. That's a very good question you asked. But I had to bring that up. That's what I learned in law class. That's why I'm a tribal law student. I learned you never go to court unless you have a jury, and two, you never go to a court of law. And if you are ever summoned into a court of law, you use a NOSA, a notice of special appearance, to take yourself out of a court of law jurisdiction and put you into tribal law jurisdiction. There's two things I learned so far. Tribal. In a law class of tribal courts.
Right.
Never, ever go to a court of law. That's the worst thing you can do. Did you study common law and that's how you ended up calling us up?
No, I was just surfing the web and came across your station and heard the judge speaking, so just decided to call it.
Okay. Well,
that's it.
A lot of common law people come into here.
I've listened to your station before, so I am familiar with it, but tonight
good.
I was just surfing up again. So.
That's good. I've had 66 recordings played. We had pretty well close to 80, I believe, in the tribal, in the law class for tribal courts. So this is about the 67th, I believe.
Yeah, I'm subscribed to the station as well, so I do listen to the recordings.
Right.
So.
Well, you have a full education there, sir. Guarantee you.
Yep.
Now, you study these, you listen to and you take the notes, and then you just call up the judge and judge, I want to be tested. I finished your course. Then give me a test. I want to take the bar exam and see what I really know. You'd be surprised. Who knows? Who knows what the judge will tell you?
Right.
You know. Are you a member of the COLB, the Monetized COLB?
No, I'm not. And the last time I called, you did explain that to me, but no, I'm not a member of that. Not a member of that.
What did I tell you last time? Remember what I told you?
You told me about joining up. I think it's like $65 a month.
No, I'm not talking about that.
Okay.
I believe, were you the one I told never, ever call up this station again unless you bring five with you?
No, that wasn't me.
Oh, that wasn't you?
Wasn't
okay,
me,
well, I'm telling you right now. Don't come into the show ever again. Until you become a member of the COLB and you bring five people with you. Don't ever come in here again. You come in here, you bring five people with you. I don't want you to come in here by yourself again. Okay, you're coming in to learn. Bring five people who are not learned at all and bring them in here and start getting a real education. Okay? Make that self
okay.
a promise to you. Make that self a promise to you. Do not call this number again unless you have five people that are going to call in to. Okay?
I'll do my best.
I don't want to see 10, 15 people in here. I want to see 100 people in here. That's what I want to see. People who really want to learn. People who want to make good of themselves, have money. Do anything they want to do by being members of the Monetized COLB program. So you not only tell people that they got to go to the show with you and get an education, but also to become prosperous by becoming members of the Monetized COLB program. Now, no college or university is going to tell you that. I'm telling you that. I'm 70 years old, a tribal law student. You would think I know a lot. I don't. I'm rather stupid, really, for not learning this years ago. So, don't call this show again unless you bring five people in here and you sign up in a Monetized COLB program and you tell them to do the same. Okay, do yourself a favor. All right? Just don't come in here and listen and don't do nothing with the information. then after your monetized COOP number, which you have to become an enrolled tribal law student, you have to be a member of monetized COOP. This information is available free to you. You can listen to it at any time you want, but we're looking for lawyers, people who are going to make a difference in society that can help people that can't afford to go to court, especially those who are innocent, that are sent to prisons by courts of law, because all they're looking for is money. That's right. That's what happens. So what? You're a drug dealer. So what? You are an entrepreneur. One of the pillars of society is entrepreneurship. Now, I'm not saying become a drug dealer. I'm saying they're making money. What's wrong with that? That's what we're all about, is make money. Isn't that right? That's the U.S.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, on a resume, they can always put down what can they be called? Pharmaceutical delivery. You know? Yeah, they're entrepreneurs. The only thing I don't like is the shooting and the killings and the knifings. They can leave that out. But as far as drugging, nothing wrong with that, man. That's entrepreneurship. Come on. Yeah. But anyway, do you get the picture now? I do not ever want to hear your voice again unless you say, Bob, I have five people with me. And they're all here. I want all of you to state your names. Then they state their names. I'm in your class. I'm here now. Not my class. This is Judge Naidu's class. It just happens to be a pre-recorded law class. Okay? So the next time you come in here, you bring five people with you, and you sign up with Monetize COLB and have them sign up too. Do yourself a favor and do them a favor. Have them sign up too. We need 8 more people to sign up. So you have them get into this class. Listen to these shows. Okay? But I want you to come in armed. I want you to come in here armed. But never again. I don't want to hear you again. I don't want to see your phone number in here again unless you bring five people with you.
Okay.
That sound good to you? You ever hear anybody ever tell you that before?
Nope.
Nobody's ever told you that before. Because I know what it's going to take. And you just don't know. I'm letting you know what it takes. We need people. We need them now. We need people to sign up now. Okay? That's what we really need. Yeah. Anyway, anybody else have any questions or comments they want to say? You want me to say the same thing to you, too? I will. What I said is for you, too. Don't call this show again unless you bring five people with you, unless you're signed up in a monetized COB program. I had to be signed up, and I have to pay for this law class. It's not free. All right? It's going to cost me thousands of dollars on payout. So I'm going to end this show tonight. I want you all to think about what I've said to you. And don't call in again unless you bring five with you. I want to see 100 spots taken up. So I'm going to end this episode. All of you have a good day tomorrow, Saturday. Thank you very much for coming in.